You paid to be a preferred traveler. So why is the TSA not doing your background check? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Poole, who is the Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. You can find their website at reason.org. We often have Bob on. Sometimes he ruffles a few feathers in the general aviation world, but he's got some interesting insights into the way things work, and we want to talk to him today about a couple of those things. Bob, thanks for taking some time out.
Glad to be back, Paul.
Glad you're off the road for a change.
Yes, indeed. I spend way more time than I would prefer on in airports and on airplanes.
Well, Bob, I was thinking about you several times over the past couple of months as the new Obama administration came into Washington, because you have been an advisor to, and in some cases during, administrations in the past.
Right.
I'm not sure, you haven't really been clear on how much of a role you're getting in this administration, but you have had some thoughts on the Transportation Security Administration, and
they're coming
under a lot of focus right now, because obviously there'll be a new Homeland Security Director in Janet Napolitano, and there's going to be a new TSA Director to replace Kip Hawley, and we're seeing some, frankly, remarkably heavy-handed solutions looking for problems coming out of the TSA
right,
at this point.
Right.
Give us your take on TSA screening and the current state of the art and where they're going with this.
Well, it's certainly a big opportunity to take a fresh look. With Congress, unless Congress decides to revise the act that they passed in haste following the 9/11 attack, there's some limits on what can be done. But there are a lot of policy changes that TSA itself could make, and one of them would be the Registered Traveler Program, which I've been a big supporter of, the idea that essentially borrowed from the idea that if people have security clearances, why should you give them the third degree when they show up at an airport?
Right.
And that's the basic inspiration. And so the original idea of Registered Traveler was that it would be a risk-based program that people who passed a background check and could prove they were the same person by means of a biometric ID when they showed up at the airport, they would get expedited treatment. They wouldn't have to take off their shoes and take their laptop out of the briefcase and so forth. Well, that's not the way TSA actually implemented the program. Kip Hawley repeatedly has said this is not a security program. It's only a convenience that the private sector has offered that lets somebody, in exchange for $100 to $200 fee, get to the head of the line. And when probed as to why they say it's not a security, he says, well, there's no background check. I did some research last fall, and it turned out the reason there's no background check is because TSA refuses to provide it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the vendors in Registered Traveler collect fingerprints and iris scans. They submit them to the clearinghouse operated by AAAE, the American Association of Airport Executives. And that's the same clearinghouse that has submitted over a million sets of fingerprints from various airport and vendor workers who need access to secure areas on airports. The FBI does a criminal history background check on all those fingerprints, sends them back to the AAA clearinghouse, which sends them back to the airports, and all those people who pass the background check have unescorted access to planes on the tarmac.
Right.
And so my question is, if that's good enough to let those people get around planes where they could do whatever, you know, they comes into their head to do, why is that not good enough for me as a registered traveler to be able to bypass the rinky-dink stuff at the checkpoint?
Well, Bob, let's get that out of the realm of a rhetorical question. And if you're Kip Hawley, what is your answer to that question?
Well, I mean, I could never understand his answer. He never directly confronted, because nobody asked him, why don't you process the criminal history do the criminal history background check on the fingerprints submitted by the registered traveler vendors. I don't think anybody really had figured that out and said it publicly until I interviewed the guy at AAAE who actually runs the program. Said, oh yeah, you know, we're sitting on several hundred thousand of these sets of fingerprints that TSA says we cannot submit to the FBI for the criminal history check.
Well, and in the meantime, we have things like the Large Aircraft Security Program coming down. It looks like it's going to get squeezed through the keyhole no matter what the public comments are. And And
that's a very frightening thing for general aviation. And again, I think it's not at all clear that there's been any kind of serious analysis that says that the costs being imposed on the aviation community are worth it in terms of real risk reduction.
Well, and this gets into this whole notion that's now commonly called security theater.
Yes.
Is there any acknowledgement in at any level of government in your contacts that that things are being done here that are strict that appear to be strictly for show?
Yeah, I have not seen any any administration official of the previous Department of Homeland Security or TSA acknowledge that at all. And that is something that I'm hoping that now that we have a new cabinet official, Janet Napolitano, running the show there, that we may at least be able to ask some of those questions. And again, a lot of that would require going back to Congress and saying, we've learned a lot now since 9/11, and some of the things that you enacted, Congress, have not turned out to be cost effective. They are a drag on our economy. They infringe people's freedoms, and they do very little, if anything, for security. And we really need to revise them.
Well, aside from a few lonely voices from the state of Kansas, which obviously are impacted greatly by
right.
the aviation business, is there anyone in Congress who seems ready to have that discussion?
Congressman Micah, who used to chair the aviation subcommittee at the time when the Republicans controlled the House, has been somewhat critical of TSA, at least on the screening practices, and certainly he's been a strong voice arguing for more outsourcing to the private sector and stricter accountability mechanisms along those lines, and that's part of the thing. Dan Lundgren from California, I testified before his Homeland Security Subcommittee a couple of years ago. It seemed to be interested in those cost-effectiveness questions at the time, but has not pushed any kind of legislative agenda to try to make changes. And, of course, now he's in the minority party rather than the majority party, so less likely to be paid attention to anyway.
Well, I hope we can come to share your optimism, Bob, about what might happen under the new leadership that's coming in with the Obama administration. It'll be interesting to watch, if nothing else.
It certainly will.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about budget issues in California and airport privatization. My guest is Bob Poole, who is Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Bob Poole is my guest, Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation. And Bob, one of the things that many people hold as synonymous with your name is the word privatization.
For good, better or worse.
I was going to say for good or bad. One of the interesting things I'm watching in the news right now is the California finally has a proposed budget. But
right.
along the way, one of the things they appeared willing to look at was privatization of one of the major Los Angeles area airports. And obviously, there are some hurdles to that. But comment from your perspective on that story.
Well, I think it's a very important development. It's a recognition which has also occurred in some quarters at the city of Los Angeles level that commercial airports all over the world have been and are being privatized, and it doesn't mean that they turn into terrible entities. It means in many cases that they actually are run better. But at the same time, the capital that has been locked up in them, the asset value, is able to be turned into some very significant cash flow for hard-pressed city and county governments. And if it's done carefully and with the right kind of a regulatory framework in place, this does not have to come at the expense of airport users in any way, shape, or form.
All right. Now, when you talk about capital being locked up in airports, among the stakeholders when you talk about ownership has to be the FAA, although
yes,
they technically don't own the airport. Obviously, you know, there are some strings attached to all the money that has come to these big airports
Absolutely.
Over the years.
All the grant, what they're called grant assurances that come with the Airport Improvement Program grants. And those grant assurances cover all sorts of things about how you run the airport as a condition of accepting the grants. And those each year when an AIP grant is received by an airport, the conditions attached to that particular grant run for 20 years from that date forward.
So obviously,
so that, you know, you can't just do whatever you want. You can't say, well, okay, I'm going to stop taking federal grants this year and now do what I want, because you have 20 years ongoing before that could possibly even change.
Okay, which brings us to the situation in Chicago with Midway Airport. You know, they were at a point where they could be in this test program. Is there any compelling economic motive for the FAA to want to see airports privatized, or is this a bad deal in their mind?
I think you probably would find varying views within the FAA. The last under Marion Blakey as FAA administrator, the FAA in its 2007 reauthorization proposal actually proposed to liberalize the pilot program that Congress passed about 12 years ago. Currently, that pilot program only allows four commercial airports with airline service to be leased to private companies. The FAA proposed upping that number to 15. And they also proposed eliminating the current veto power that is given by statute to the majority of airlines serving an airport. So those were two changes that indicated that, at least under the last administration, the FAA was favorable to expanding the privatization of airports. We have no idea. There's been no statement whatever from President Obama or his Transportation Secretary, Ray LaHood. Interesting that both are from Illinois and the president himself from Chicago, where Mayor Daley is the leading edge of what could be an airport privatization wave.
Mm-hmm. How about the airlines in this? Now, they have some veto authority in these discussions at this point. I would think if I was an airline executive that I would view negotiating with a municipality or even with the FAA to be, frankly, a little softer process than what I might face negotiating with a private sector interest. Is there any of that?
I think that's certainly been historically the position of U.S. airlines. However, that seems to have changed. Chicago, although it took more than a year of negotiations, they ended up getting the airline approval. 65% of the number of airlines operating at Midway had to approve the deal, and 65% of the landed weight, which meant Southwest. They had to get both approvals in order to do the deal. And what appealed to the airlines was the ability to make their rates and charges predictable for the next 20-odd years. And that's what they got. They got a formula that's a freeze for the first 5 years, and then just an inflation adjustment based on the consumer price index for the subsequent years. So most of the airports where privatization is being considered are operating under a residual cost system, where the airlines cannot predict from 1 year to the next what their actual exposure to airport cost is going to be, because they pay the residual, the difference between all other revenues and the total of all costs. And some years that's a small amount, and other years, particularly in years when the economy is not doing well, it can be a large amount, which is precisely the time when the airlines don't want it to be a large amount. So there's some advantage to the airlines in having predictability, and it was certainly in the interest of the city to come up with a formula that they could make the airlines comfortable, at the same time would not drastically reduce the asset value that the private sector would bid upon.
Well, I would think that in the case of LAX specifically, and airport management in the Los Angeles area, the airlines, if nothing else, have seen somewhat of a crisis-driven process for determining what their costs will be.
Yes, yes. I mean, LAX has a pretty sad history of dealing with the airlines, and so from that standpoint, you one could almost say almost anything might be better. But no, that's a little bit too glib, I think. I think what we have in the kind of process that was worked out for Midway is an approach that is really potentially a win-win. It's a win for the city, it's a win for the airlines, and it's, one hopes, a win for the investors and the companies that that would win a bid process for an airport.
Now, even if an airport that has been a public airport for a long time is suddenly privatized, there's going to be a lot of inertia in the various processes and
absolutely, because you know, the privatization per se does not abrogate any existing agreements.
Right.
So an agreement that has 5 or 10 or 15 more years to run is going to run unless they can voluntarily negotiate a revision of that so that everybody's on the same agreement.
In that light, are we going to see some interesting lessons coming out of Branson, Missouri? They're just a few weeks away from opening.
That's a really different model because that that's an entirely privately developed airport. There's no federal money, no AIP grants. And so they are not bound by any of the federal grant agreements, and they can run it as a business. And in fact, one of the key things they're doing is offering airlines limited time exclusivity on routes. So AirTran has signed up to be the exclusive carrier between Atlanta and Branson for, I think, the first 2 years of that service.
It's going to be interesting to watch. I am fascinated by that model, and we've talked to those guys a couple of times about what they're doing, and it'll be really interesting. If it works there, it would seem there would be a model to do it in a much bigger market.
Yes, but again, it depends on not being subject to the FAA grant agreement. So the question is, are there other market niches where a new freestanding airport could work? Now, the third Chicago airport in Piatone that has been on the drawing boards for many, many years, and the Illinois DOT has acquired most of the land for it, that has been envisioned as an airport that might be developed without federal grants. And if the Branson model is seen as working, that might be able to jumpstart that airport at Piatone.
Well, Bob, you have a fascinating job, if busy. You also have two e-newsletters that our listeners might be interested in, one dealing with air traffic, one dealing with airport security. If listeners are interested in reading these newsletters, how should they get in touch with you?
They can just go to the reason.org website, and right on the homepage is something you can click on to see the archive of each of those newsletters and subscribing. You just click on the button that says I'd like to subscribe, and that's it. No charge, no obligation. And anytime you get too annoyed, you can just say, please cancel.
All right. Well, it's www.reason.org. And Bob, as always, we appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Bob Poole is Director of Transportation Studies for the Reason Foundation, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.